Mark Emmert joins us on Sports Byline. He is the president of the NCAA, and previously he was the president of the University of Washington, which is also his alma mater. And you know, Mark, when I thought about you and the fact that you were a very successful president of a great university and you were sought after for other university jobs around the country, I wondered, what is it that was appealing to you about the NCAA presidency?
Well, you know, as I'm sitting here for the first time in 30 years in a fall, not welcoming students back to campus, you know, it's a good time to reflect on that a little bit. The fact is that you know, in this role, while it's starkly different than being a university president in many ways, it still provides me with an opportunity to shape students' lives, to have an impact on their abilities to be successful, to interact with university presidents all around the country, and it still has kept my hand in higher education, while at the same time providing me just a different venue to do all of those things, and I've been enjoying it immensely.
What did you anticipate the job to be like, and how has it been similar to or different from what you thought, Mark?
Well, the biggest difference, of course, for me is the fact that I'm not on a campus and working with students every day. I anticipated that, obviously. But I've been very pleased with the level and surprised a bit with the level of connection I still have with universities and the leadership of them. That's been really great fun. The level of media attention, of course, that sports gets is something I anticipated, but it's greater than I ever imagined. And then, obviously, this year we've had this rash of really high-profile infractions cases. That's something that nobody anticipates, and it's caught us all by surprise, and it's been disappointing in many respects. On the other hand, it's brought to clear relief some of the things that we need to get done.
At the University of Washington, you obviously could get things done that would affect the campus and affect the students and the athletes there. But when you're talking about the NCAA and all the schools that are part of the NCAA, how likely is it that one person can affect any direction change?
Well, I hope it's pretty darn likely. I'm working awful hard at it. You know, it's a bit like being Secretary General of the UN in some respects. You've got all of these members. There are different sizes and shapes, and they've got different needs and expectations. But what I have found and what's been very useful is that I know, of course, the attitude, backgrounds, and values of university presidents, and I've found them to be incredibly like-minded. We had a retreat just a week ago where we outlined a very aggressive agenda, and I think we're going to be able to get some surprisingly effective things done in a very short order. So while you have to go about your business a little bit differently, there's still an enormous opportunity to be impactful in this job, and we're going to get it done.
Mark, I read an interview, and the quote was from you, "This struggle to find the right balance between the academic component of sports and the athletic component and the entertainment component. Every school has to find that right balance." What is the right balance in your mind?
Well, first and foremost, student athletes have to be just that. They have to be students. They have to be serious members of their university community, not athletes who happen to be students, but students who happen to be athletes. And that gets lost in the shuffle often. You know, intercollegiate athletics is fundamentally different than professional sports, in that these are students who are out there competing. And so you can't lose sight of the core of what intercollegiate athletics is about. Second piece is, obviously, you need to provide opportunities for students to be as successful in all their endeavors. With student athletes, that means they want to be as successful as they can be on the court or on the field, and allow them to fulfill their highest potential in their chosen avocation. And then, of course, you've got to strike the right balance for your university community, for your fan base, for the people who enjoy coming to these games and seeing the schools be successful. I've always found that if you keep those things in just about that order, first and foremost, this is about students and their success as students. Secondly, it's about helping them be successful in their sport. And then thirdly, making sure that you're being attentive to the role that sports play in the culture of your campus, then you're in pretty good shape.
But, Mark, I think you know, I mean, you're a realist. You know what the world is like out there. And anytime you bring money into something, you've got agents, you've got television that's generating an awful lot of money. You've got young kids that come from a different generation with the influences that they have upon them. How realistic is it to use that idealistic response you just give me to something that in the real world really doesn't kind of apply?
Well, I think it does apply, and it applies more than most people realize. So if you look at, for example, just sheer academic success, and today, in 2011, the academic success of student-athletes in every sport is at a higher level than it's ever been. So something on the order of 80% of all of our student-athletes are finishing with baccalaureate degrees. They're having better success, whether they're men, young men or young women, regardless of their gender or their race. They're doing their job in the classroom, and that's really clear. Are the challenges of the commercial model that's impinging on all of us a real? Of course they are, and you're absolutely right about that. So we have to be clear about what we mean when we talk about the collegiate model, and we have to recognize that those risks that you're describing are out there. But at the same time, you know, having a lot of resources available isn't a bad thing if those resources are used effectively. We now, across all of our institutions and through the NCAA itself, are giving out $2 billion worth of scholarship support to students. That's more than any other source than the federal government, except the federal government. So we're feeling really pleased about how most of those dollars are being used, and so I welcome the revenue that comes in to support athletic programs. We just got to make sure that we differentiate the fact that our students are students and they're not employees.
What about that 20% that aren't along the 80% like you were talking about? Is that always going to taint and be a problem for the NCAA, that they're going to look at it as an economic factor in college athletics?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question, Ron? It broke up on me.
Well, you mentioned about 80%, and I said, what about the other 20%, those that are in it for the economic reasons? Is that always going to taint college athletics, Mark?
Well, I sure don't think so. You know, an 80% graduation rate is way above the national average for institutions like those that are part of the NCAA. And in fact, at virtually every university in America, student-athletes have higher graduation rates than the non-student-athletes. So the athletes are doing well in the classroom, and I don't think that's something we should be ashamed of. In fact, it's something we should be proud of. Do we want it to be better? You bet. And we've taken some actions just in the past few weeks to assure that. But that's not as big a problem as the world thinks it is.
You know, a lot was made out of Southeast Conference Commissioner Mike Slive's comments, and he was here on Sports Byline, and we talked a little bit about intercollegiate athletics has lost the benefit of the doubt. A, do you agree with him? And if so, what will it take to get that benefit of the doubt back?
Well, I completely agree with him. In fact, Mike and I keep sharing that line in our interviews. I think we have lost the benefit of the doubt because of these very high-profile cases, and I understand that completely. But we've got to do basically four things. First of all, as I said, we've got to make sure that our student-athletes are students, that we're holding them to very high academic standards, both coming into intercollegiate athletics, but also while they're inside it, and that we have a high graduation rates. Secondly, we got to make sure that we treat student-athletes very fairly, whether that involves increasing their grant and aid so they're getting their full cost of attendance covered, whether that means we have to provide multi-year scholarships so they know they're getting a fair deal, providing them with the kind of support they need for in the classroom academically and in summer schools and other areas. We've got to do that. Third, we've got to make better sense, Ron, out of our rule book. It contains a lot of things that are so prescriptive that they're just, candidly, they're just silly. And we've got to focus the rules and our enforcement efforts on things that are genuine threats to integrity, like we're seeing right now, where we say, look, you've got to engage in ethical behavior. You can't behave unethically and be part of intercollegiate athletics. And finally, we've got to match up the penalties that we impose so that they provide real disincentives to all of the wrong kind of behavior. We're making real progress in all four of those areas. Coming out of the retreat that we had a week ago, we've got the serious commitment of our leading university presidents, and I know you're going to see in the coming weeks and months some pretty dramatic changes in each of those areas.
You know, I got a call the other night on this show because it is international and national, and it was a very interesting one. And the question was one that I stopped and I thought about. You know, if you look at USC and the Reggie Bush situation, giving back the Heisman for the first time, the Ohio State situation, the allegations against the University of Miami, Cam Newton investigation, the North Carolina State situation as well. And the caller asked me, Mark, is this just the tip of the iceberg? Is this just an exception, or is this the rule in college athletics? And you know what? I couldn't answer him. Can you help me?
Well, I don't know that I can either. You know, I often get asked if athletics are better or worse right now than they were in the past, and I don't know the answer to that. What I know is that the level of problems that we have right now is unacceptable. And so to me, this isn't a matter of ascertaining whether it's better or worse. It's fixing what we've got in front of us. I know a lot of coaches. I know a lot of programs. I've had the pleasure of working with a lot of them, and I know that the vast majority of them are very, very good people trying to do the very best they can. They're incredible mentors and teachers to a lot of young men and women out there, and they've done it the right way. It is, in fact, the exceptions that get noted because they are exceptional. And when you see the cases that you just outlined, plus a handful of others, there's no other way to describe them than shocking. And we're going to respond to those cases appropriately so that they are indeed exceptional, and we want them to become rarer and rarer.
I know the NCAA prohibits alcohol advertising in their broadcasts, but yet I have a story in front of me. It says beer will be sold this fall to average football fans at 20 major college venues. That's twice as many as 10 years ago. And Oliver Luck, the AD at the University of West Virginia, said with the deficits that are being run at some schools getting bigger, you're going to have more and more schools going to it. Now, we had a very ugly incident in San Francisco over the weekend, and the police chief of San Francisco said that alcohol was a major reason for the problems. And I'm just wondering, is the NCAA and these schools really looking at a dangerous situation? I'm a little bit surprised at the disparity in the thought process of not allowing alcohol in your broadcast, but universities allowing it in their stadiums.
We allow universities to, of course, make a lot of decisions on their own about what their campus alcohol policies are going to be, and in a variety of areas, of course. We need to let universities make up their own minds on some of these questions. Does alcohol fuel a lot of these problems? Well, of course it does. And, you know, I don't know any circumstance where alcohol improves behavior. But we're gonna let those judgments be made by the individual schools. Collectively, we have said, and all the members have said, the majority of them have all weighed in and said, we don't want alcohol advertising associated with NCAA championships, and we're going to hold to that because we feel pretty strongly about it.
In a Sports Byline USA fan poll, I asked the question, should athletes receive some type of stipend, not a salary, but a stipend? And they came back, the fans said no, they felt that the scholarships was enough. I know that's a debate going on within the NCAA. Tell me where that stands in that discussion.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, because I think there's a lot of confusion about that whole issue. First of all, everyone in the NCAA, and me as strongly or maybe more strongly than anybody, feel that we will never and can never pay student-athletes to play sports. Once you start down that road, then you've really thrown the entire collegiate athletic model out the window, and we don't want to go there. That's not who we are and what we stand for. We are looking at the current stipend model, the current grant and aid model. And that grant and aid model today has tuition fees, room and board, and books and supplies in it. What it doesn't have is support for all the ancillary costs that every university has already identified as their full cost of attendance. And it's a number that's used for all of their students, not student athletes, for everybody on campus. The federal government has each school established this full cost of attendance. What does it really cost to go to this school? And we're debating whether or not we want to move toward that full cost of attendance model for the grant and aid model. It could provide some support for student athletes to cover the ancillary costs that every student has, travel to and from their home to school, modest clothing allowance, modest allowance for miscellaneous costs, and that would be varying from school to school, but it tends to be around a couple $1,000s above the tuition fees, room, and board number, and we're debating whether or not we want to move in that direction right now.
Mark, I want to thank you for coming on and talking to me about some of these issues. I'd like to stay in touch with you because I think that an open dialogue like this is very useful to everybody. Thank you very much, Mark.
Oh, my pleasure.
Mark Emmert, president of the NCAA. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.